Okay, so it is 14th of February 2018 in Bahrain. And, well, thank you. And we're going to be looking at how to stay inspired. So are all of you teachers in this world? How many of you are teachers? In Madhav Garden. How many of you are teachers in Madhav's Garden?
Saturday, Friday
either. Okay. So this seminar is for teachers. So if you are not the teacher, I hope you will also enjoy it. But the seminar is made for people who are teaching. Because sometimes it's difficult to stay inspired in our service. Just like if you have a towel and you are never drying it. You understand? So if you are just simply using, it starts stinking. So we have to have a way that we keep fresh. And that way, for many, many years, you can still be inspired. Would everybody like that? After 5 years, 10 years, 25 years, you are still, yes, I am a teacher. You want that?
Yes.
Okay. So it's very interesting also with Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said that in every endeavor, there are periods of rest and periods of activity. And he said that the highest principle is to serve others, to help others, to save others. That's the highest principle. He said, but higher than that is to save yourself. So probably in Bahrain, everybody here has been on an airplane, yes? So you know on the airplane, before you put the oxygen mask on the child, first you have to put on your own. So this seminar, we're going to be talking about how to have on our own oxygen mask. How to take care of ourselves. And I think not only for teachers, but especially for women. You know, we're very much trained, always take care of everybody else. Take care of the husband, mother-in-law, father-in-law, children, everybody. And maybe there is time for us sometimes. We may think, oh, if I am doing something for myself, that is selfish. But if we don't take care of ourselves, we cannot even help anybody. It's not possible. So I'd like to know, we started late. I'd like to know, when are we ending? What time are we going to end today?
12.
Oh, I don't think we can do everything we have planned and still end at 12. This is the problem, because we were starting 45 minutes late.
12:30? Can you raise your hand for 12:30, please?
Be honest. Is 12:30
okay? 12:30
okay? Okay, well, we'll do this first thing until 12, and then we'll take like 2-3 minutes just to stand up and stretch. And then 12 to 12:30, we're going to be looking at cooperation between the teachers. All right? Is that okay? So we're going to be looking at several areas. Altogether, we're looking at 6 different areas of how we can stay inspired for life. And again, please don't look at the papers now. Just turn them upside down and write on the back. Don't use them right now. You'll use them. Don't worry. So the first area we're going to look at is getting practical help. Now, this is something we'll talk about a lot more between 12 and 12:30 when we talk about cooperation between teachers. But getting practical help. This means not only for our teaching work, but in our life in general. Please don't read the papers now. That means you in the pretty yellow clothes. turn it over and read it later. Don't worry. You'll read it. No problem. So, you know, in a traditional society, the old societies, you had an extended family, yes? I remember when my oldest sister got married, she got married to a family from Yemen. She was in Israel, but she married the oldest of 10 children from a Yemenite family. And the whole family was all there. You know, when the children grew up, they got a house just a few minutes' walk from the parents. And the children were running, there's my auntie and uncle, and there's my grandparents. And they say it takes a village to raise a child. It was there. It was like that. Everybody was helping everybody, especially within the family. You know, and when there were large families, when people had 5, 6, 10 children, then there were so many aunties and uncles and so many cousins and so many. So even if you didn't like one auntie, you know, and now there's this strong propaganda, one child, right? So one child means no brothers, no sisters, no uncles, no aunts, no cousins. And even today, if you have, you know, maybe one brother and one auntie, then somebody's in Bangalore and somebody's in Geneva and somebody's in Chicago. When I was coming on the plane, there was one other devotee lady who was on the same plane. She was visiting her grown children in India, and then she got news that her husband had gotten ill. So she had come back, that he was in the hospital. So I said, do you have family in Bahrain? She said, oh, the devotee family. Is the microphone okay? But sometimes we are not so much like family to each other. You understand? I mean, one big problem with our modern life is that we get very isolated. And everything gets on us. When I joined ISKCON, everybody used to live in the temple ashram. And it was again like a big extended family. Of course, we were not able to maintain that for a very long time. But somehow or other, to work with each other. And this means being able to ask for help when you need help. And looking and seeing, does somebody need help? Trying to be for each other what the families used to do a long time ago. You know, helping with each other's children, sometimes helping with cooking. Help in general with our life to be helping each other so we're not just isolated. And this means also if people are going through some kind of crisis in their family or some kind of crisis in their life, but even with everyday life. So the next thing we're going to look at, and without practical help, we get exhausted. And we think, oh, I cannot keep teaching. You know, I have to clean, I have to cook, and I take the children to school, and I have my work to do. And how many of you also work? How many of you have jobs? No. None of you have jobs.
Also working,
they're all working now. They're not here. Any of you work from home? No? Nobody works from home. Okay. So the next thing is spiritual nourishment. And this is also, I see, more of a challenge for the ladies. Because your children are going to school. What time are your children going to school? 6 o'clock in the morning.
Seven
o'clock in the morning. And then your husbands are going to work what time?
7, 8 o'clock.
And I know you are very good, so you're giving them all fresh cooked meals, yes? So this means you're starting to cook at what? 4:30 in the morning?
4:30. 5.
So we're saying, what are you supposed to do at 4:35? You're supposed to have Mangal Aarti. And instead you're in the kitchen, and you're cooking, and then you're getting, get up, please, you have to get up, take a shower. Where's your homework? Where's your shoes? Right? And then finally everybody's gone to 8 o'clock, and you go, and only then you pick up your japa bag, yeah? So this, yes? I've seen it all over the world. And you just, you know, here we don't have the working ladies, but imagine for the women who are also working. In your community, you have women who are also working. Imagine if you also have to get to work at 7 o'clock in the morning. And then where is your sadhana? So this is a problem because, you know, we're not going to wake up at 2 in the morning. I don't think so. I mean, I could say wake up at 2 in the morning, but I don't think that will help. So we have to find some way that every day we actually have good quality sadhana. Maybe it is starting at 8:30 in the morning. Maybe some of it is in the evening. You know, when Prabhupada was a grihastha, he would chant 4 rounds in the morning, then 4 before breakfast, so altogether 8 in the morning, and 4 before lunch, 4 before dinner. Or sometimes he would do 4 before breakfast, 4 before lunch, 4 before dinner, 4 before going to bed. And this way he would chant 16 rounds. But not only japa, it's also hearing. I mean, one thing you can do while you are cooking is you can hear. You can listen to lectures, yes? You can listen to audiobooks. Do you have Prabhupada's books and audiobooks? So this is widely available. You can listen to the whole Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita when you're driving in your car. You can also listen, every time you're driving in your car, if you're listening to Bhagavatam or you're listening to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavad Gita, after some time you will hear the whole book. One friend of mine, when she was in the university, she would listen to an audiobook of Bhagavad Gita whenever she was walking in the campus. And after some years, she memorized the whole Bhagavad Gita. I know one devotee also was listening to Chaitanya Charitamrita when he was driving. And again, memorized, not every word, but basically memorized Chaitanya Charitamrita. So you can do that also. But something that's really nourishing to you every day. You don't want to make your sadhana like another job. Okay, I take care of the laundry, get the kids to school, do the shopping, do the cooking, chant my rounds. You know, don't make it, oh, something else I have to do. You understand? That this should, it should be something very sacred. Otherwise, again, you will become exhausted. It's like, you know, if you're feeding other people and you're not eating. And this is my time to be with Krishna. And the same, you know, I'm sure most of you have deities in your home. You know? So if you are taking responsibility, for, how many of you take responsibility for at least some of the puja every day? So again, you want it to be sweet. Some of you, maybe just your husband's doing or your children, but you know, you really want it to be sweet. That here is Krishna. And then sometimes, that is every day my sadhana time, as much as possible. Sometimes there's an emergency, but in our normal daily life, our sadhana, our japa, our hearing, and every day, some reading, even if it's just hearing a book. Or, you know, you can also read a book on your phone. Yes, you know that? You can get a reading app on your phone. Everybody has phones, yes? It's like I have a Kindle app on my phone. It is free, free app. And then I got all the books from the BBT, also free. So on my phone I have everything, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar Devotion, everything. And it keeps the place where you're reading, and then I have all the audio books on my phone. So little, you can do little something before you take lunch prasad. I will read one verse. When you're cooking, I will listen to and try to make it really count for something. And then not just every day, but every once in a while, maybe once in a month, maybe on Ekadasi, maybe once in a year. Something that is really concentrated, where you go to a kirtan retreat or a japa retreat or go to Vrindavan, and don't just go to Loy Bazaar. you know. Don't just go to Vrindavan for shopping. But sometime when you can really, this is my time to connect with Krishna. Even if it's just 3-4 days where you're really focused. Sometimes even, you know, like the big festival days, we are working triple hard. Sometimes the most difficult day to chant 16 rounds is Janmashtami. You know, you're there at 11 o'clock at night. Oh, I finish my rounds. Because you've been cooking all day and decorating the temple all day. So sometime when you're not just busy and running and this and that, but where you can just focus. I was once in a I was visiting, so this doesn't really count because I wasn't there, so I wasn't part of the community. I was just visiting a temple for Janmashtami. But it was so much activity, and then I just went in my room and closed the door and got out Krishna book. I thought, just going to read Krishna's appearance, 10 minutes. So every day to be spiritually nourished, and then periodically, whatever it may be, maybe Ekadasi, chant another couple of rounds, read a little bit more, something, and you find what will work for you. You know, and maybe you can even ask your husband one day a week, hey, can you, every Saturday from 5 to 5:30, can you watch the children and I can spend just some time just myself in Bhagavatam. You know, and it may be doing, learning a new bhajan. It may be sewing clothes for the deities. Whatever you really love in service. Do this at least sometimes. You may not have time every day. But it's very important to keep yourself alive in Krishna consciousness. Okay, so then the third thing is to have what we call fans, cheerleaders. I don't know what you call them. In America, for the football, American football is different from Indian football. American football is so bad. But anyway, in American football... It's so bad. It's like a war, you know? They damage their brain. Anyway, I'm not promoting American football. But in the American football, they have the cheerleaders. Have you seen that? Yeah. Usually it's the women and they're not dressed. And they're going, go! Go, team! Go, win, team! Go, win, team! I just came from Mayapur. I was there for the ILS. And I many devotees that I've known for a long years, when I saw them, I would make sure I said, thank you for staying in ISKCON all these years through good times and bad times, and thank you for chanting your rounds every day. How many people thank you for chanting your rounds every day? How many times? Thank you for serving Srila Prabhupada. You know, people thank us for the very big things. If we collect a lot of money, if we distribute a lot of books, you know. But it's often the little things that we're doing all the time that are the most difficult, and people don't even notice it. So try to have someone in your life sometime who just thanks you for the life. You know, just says, wow, you're raising two children here and you're really doing your best to raise them as devotees. It's so nice you're trying to serve your husband nicely. And I know your father-in-law is very sick and he's living in your house and it's difficult, and thank you for doing that. Now, of course, my saying this is also implying that not only should we have fans, we should try to be one. So try to be that cheerleader for other people. Now, the cheerleader doesn't have to be someone who understands our service. It can be someone else. It doesn't have to be another teacher. It doesn't have to be somebody, some people in your life. Now, suppose you can't get that from the other devotees. I found that as a teacher, I also joined groups of just teachers, whether they were devotees or not devotees, to be as kind of encouragement. And another kind of encouragement that I found was from Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada will say things like, you know, Gurukul is our most important project. And you have some quote like that that you're reading, and periodically, especially when you feel discouraged, to be able to read something that acts like that, like some kind of a cheerleader. Now, after you've been teaching for a long time, your children will grow up and some of them will be your cheerleaders. So when they get to be, 15, 20, 25. So some of them will say to you, "Wow, you were such a good teacher and you really helped my life." But they won't usually say that when they're 7 and 8 years old. Okay, so the next one is kind of opposite. So this is people who will correct us. And this is also very, very important. Because nobody likes to be corrected. Nobody. We may say, "Oh yes, I like to be corrected," but actually, I have not met people who like to be corrected. But we need that also. If we are going to be able to be inspired for our whole life in teaching, we absolutely need it. Because without this, sometimes many of the things that are discouraging us are because we're not doing things in the best way. We may think, "Oh, there's a problem with the children," or "There's a problem with the families," but maybe there's a problem with me, and I need to be corrected. And how will I know unless somebody corrects me? So this point implies that you have people who are visiting the classes. And if you don't, this is an important point, that you have somebody who's visiting the classes, or we'll talk about this with cooperation, that you visit each other's classes and you give feedback. And there's a whole science of how to give feedback in a way that is not so difficult to take. The basic principle of it is that you only talk about observable facts. If you say, "Oh, I think the children were bored," that's not an observable fact. That's my interpretation. But if I come in and I say, "I watched the class for 10 minutes and I was taking notes every 5 minutes what the children were doing, and I can show you this is the notes I took." And you can see, half the children, they are just playing with something else. So that is valuable feedback. Does this make sense to everybody? If you just say, "You are irresponsible, the children are bored," that's not valuable feedback. But if you say, you write down all the names of the children, and then every 5 minutes you write down, 1, 2, 3, 4, how much they are engaged in the class. And then you can show the other teacher, "Look, at this time, all the children were only at a 1. Oh, what was I doing at that time? And then you can understand, what I was doing at that time was not so engaging for the children. So when we give people correction, that correction, as far as possible, should be factual. Just facts. It's much easier to take. Does that make sense to everybody? Yes? If I just say, I see when you came, the only 3 of the children had their books, and the materials, you didn't have the materials for the class, and the children, at 9:35 I saw half the children talking. So that's much better than if we just say, you are not prepared, you are not responsible. Yes? Is this clear to everybody? This is actually quite important. And we could teach this as a whole separate. You could teach actually for quite a long time how to give proper feedback to others. But even if someone gives me, I should try to give proper feedback. But even if someone gives improper feedback to me, I should be grateful for feedback and grateful for correction, even if it's very bitter. Sometimes when we first hear correction, we just defend ourselves, But we should try to control that and really think about it and pray on it. And maybe this is right. I mean, I was just a week ago, one devotee was showing me his new educational program. So I was looking at it and I could see that it was not very good. And he told me, oh, my wife and I, we have been working for 3 years on this. And then I said, Prabhu, what training do you have in teaching? And he said, oh, I've heard from my Guru Maharaj and this Maharaj and that Maharaj. I said, no, I'm not asking you that. I'm asking what training do you have in teaching, in pedagogy? Oh, I have gone to Vienna. And I said, no, I don't mean that you've gone to 300,000 Bhagavatam classes. I'm asking, what training do you have in teaching? And again, he's telling me this. And I said, so you mean you have no training in teaching? So that was bitter. And I said, I'm looking at what you're doing, and, you know, I could say, I don't know if you remember, we'll be going over this again on Saturday. I was saying, all of your assignments are at a very low level. For maybe some of you, I hope, remember when I was here the other time when we were looking at the level of learning. Do any of you remember? We're looking at just information and then understanding and application. Huh? Synthesis, yes. So I said, this is all very low level. So he did not like to hear it, and at first he was arguing with me. After a while he said, oh, thank you. I don't know if he'll change anything. But people who will correct us, that means there has to be some trust. We need some people in our life where there's some trust, where I trust them that they don't want to hurt me, right? Where they trust me that if they give me some correction, I will listen. Then we also should sometimes do self-evaluation, and we'll be doing that in about 5 minutes. So we also want to periodically do some self-evaluation. And it's good if that can be a little formal, where we have different categories. And what we're doing today is just a self-evaluation of how much we're getting taken care of. But you could also do a self-evaluation of your teaching. How many different methods am I using? How much time do I spend preparing? How engaged are the children? What is the children's behavior like? How much am I communicating with the other teachers? What's my relationship with the parents? How much am I achieving my objectives? And sometimes, at least like twice a year, to take some time and do some self-correction. And then when we find a problem, and we'll be going over this shortly, we use what's called a well-formed plan to try to improve it. Okay, the next area, the fifth area, are other people, and we're going to be discussing this at the end of at about 12 o'clock, other people who are doing the same service that we have some collegiality with, that we can talk just like, you know, if you are a software engineer, you want to also associate with other software engineers. If you want to practice Krishna consciousness in Prabhupada's mood, so we have this society for that purpose. It's very difficult to have this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. It's not an easy thing. But it's there to give this cooperation and collegiality, we call it. This feeling that we are helping each other, but particularly in our service. So the practical help may be in general in our life, but here we're talking, just even to talk about our service. So I remember many years ago, I went to Mumbai, and at the time there were, I think, 3 schools run by ISKCON. Yeah, 3 schools then. But they never met together. And they were friends. It wasn't that they didn't like each other. They were actually very good friends, but they had never met together just to talk about the school. So we had a meeting of the head of the school. And then you discover, oh, everyone else is also having this problem. Or this is how this person solves it. This is how this... And it gives you perspective. So it's not something you have to do every day or every week, but at least like once in a year. at least, to be with, and this can also be non-devotees. You know, if there's like, I don't know what they have here, but in America we have big conventions of teachers. And anybody could go, and you can hear seminars about teaching, and you can talk to the teachers. All right, the last one we're going to look at is a little interesting. Let me write this up on the board so far, what we've done.
Okay, so practical help in our life in general. Why have I just lost a third of the people? And then this last one we're going to talk about right now. Is there any reason why I just lost all those people altogether?
Some of
the
people are
addressing
the duties early morning.
All of those people?
Three months.
I lost more than that.
I lost like 10 people. Okay, so we're going to look now at ups and downs. If you want to get a copy of this for yourself, you can ask Kanai Priya, and she can send you an electronic copy of what I'm going to read to you. So this is from the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14. Chapter 14 is the modes of material nature, text 22 to 25. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active. So let me read this again. This is actually quite astonishing what Krishna is saying. He who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active. So that's just part of this verse. Then going to the purport, I'm just going to read a small part of the purport. Prabhupada says, when a living entity stays in this material world, embodied by the material body, it is to be understood that he is under the control of one of the three modes of material nature. When he is actually out of the body, then he is out of the clutches of the material modes of nature. But as long as he is not out of the material body, he should be neutral. So what does this mean? Anyone tell me what they think that this means, what Krishna and Prabhupada mean here? Okay.
Second, Prabhupada mentioning till the time we are in the body, we are attached with one of these modes.
Okay.
But Krishna is saying different.
Okay, so you're hearing a little contradictory. It seems like you're saying that Prabhupada says, as long as we're in the body, we'll be attached with the mode. But Krishna is saying, don't be attached with the modes. Any other thoughts? The body makes us associated with the modes, yes. Yes. Some more thoughts, what they're saying?
As long as we are attached to the body, we'll be entangled with three modes of material nature.
Oh, I like that. As long as we are attached to the body, we'll be entangled, because the body is entangled.
And after that, if we feel that we are not the body, we are the soul, we'll be neutral.
Okay, if we realize we're not the body, we're the soul, we'll be neutral. Okay. What does that mean, to be neutral?
Balance.
We'll be balanced. Again, what does that mean?
No happiness, no distress, nothing will be. Everything safer.
No happiness, no distress. That sounds kind of boring, but anyway.
People understand that we don't belong to this world.
We'll understand we don't belong to this world, yes. So
whatever comes our way, we'll just accept it and we'll just do our duty. And
okay. Continue. Accept whatever comes and we do our duty. Will our bodies still be under the modes of nature?
Yes.
Yes, Prabhupada says here, as long as we have a body, the body will be under the modes of nature. So Krishna is saying, don't hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they're there, and don't desire them when they are gone. So this seems to be saying that as long as we're in this body, sometimes we're going to be illuminated. Sometimes our body is going to be healthy and our mind will be sharp and clear. Sometimes our body will be full of desire, our mind will be full of desire and disturbed. Sometimes our body's tired or sick and our mind is sad or angry or depressed. Is this going to go away? No. What's supposed to change? Well, no, the mind is also going to be under the modes of nature. What's going to change? Our intelligence. We become the what? Observer. So I think sometimes devotees think spiritual life means my body and my mind will always be in sattva-gun or in bhakti. That's not possible. The body and the mind will sometimes be in tamagun. But one can be not affected, like you're just watching it. So I'm going to read a little bit from one Christian author who's writing about how we can use the up times and the down times. Because if we're attached to the up times, then when there's down times, then we just, I don't know if I can teach anymore, forget it. So again, if you want a copy of this, you can just ask Kanai Priya, she can send you a copy. So this is a famous Christian author, his name is C.S. Lewis, you may have heard of him, he's also written the Narnia books, you may have heard. Has no one ever told you about the law of undulation? You know, undulation is like waves. As spirits, humans belong to the eternal world, but their bodies and minds inhabit time. This means that while their spirit can be directed to an eternal object, their bodies, passions, and imaginations are in continual change, for to be in time means to change. Their nearest approach to constancy, therefore, is undulation, the repeated return to a level from which they repeatedly fall back, a series of troughs and peaks. You can see this undulation in every department of life: interest in work, affection for friends, physical appetites,
All go up and down. As long as one lives on earth, periods of emotional and bodily richness and liveliness will alternate with periods of numbness and poverty. Now, he doesn't mean just money. You understand that? Yes? He's meaning a richness of life. One must ask what use God wants to make of the dryness and dullness times. In God's effort to get permanent possession of a soul, he relies on the troughs even more than on the peaks. So what is a trough? Like a valley. Some of his special favorites have gone through longer and deeper troughs than anyone else. The reason is this. The obedience which God demands is not the absorption of a soul's will into his, but quite a different thing. He wants servants who become sons. He is full and flows over. He wants a world full of beings united to him, but still distinct individuals. And that is where the troughs come in. You might wonder why God does not make more use of his power to be sensibly present to human beings in any degree he chooses and at any moment. But the irresistible and the indisputable are the two weapons which the very nature of his desire forbids him to use. Merely to override a human will as his felt presence in any but the faintest and most mitigated degree would most likely do, would be for him useless. He wants the living entities to be one with him, but yet themselves. Merely to cancel them or assimilate them will not serve. He is prepared to do a little overriding at the beginning. He will set them off with communications of his presence, which, though faint, seem great to them, with emotional sweetness and easy conquest over temptation. But he never allows this state of affairs to last long. Sooner or later, he withdraws, if not in fact, at least from their conscious experience, all those supports and incentives. He leaves the entities to stand up on his own legs, to carry out from the will alone duties which have lost all relish. It is during such trial periods, much more than during the peak periods, that the human being is growing into the sort of being he wants it to be. Hence the prayers offered in the state of dryness please him very much. He wants the living being to walk and must therefore take away his hand. And if only the will to walk is really there, he is pleased even with their stumbles. Illusion is never more in danger than when a human being, no longer desiring but still intending to do the will of God, looks round upon a universe from which every trace of him seems to have vanished and asks why he has been forsaken and still obeys. So now you can take the paper that says Vocation of Teaching in Krishna Consciousness, Part 2. We're not teaching Part 1 this trip. Inspired for Life. It's two pieces of paper. So this is a self-evaluation form. So if we can take the next 5 minutes and please fill this out. So now we're going to make a plan to improve that thing. Pick the thing that you pick should be something you want to improve. It shouldn't be something you don't care about. So pick something, pick one of the items for which you gave yourself just a one. If you have no ones, pick one thing, for which you gave yourself a two. If you have no twos, pick something for which you gave yourself a three. Okay, and now we're going to work on a plan to try to improve. So all of you have the paper that says well-formed plan? Yes? Everybody has that? This is a nice whiteboard. Can you erase or actually erase? Of course, the mic doesn't reach to the whiteboard.
Okay. So this is a system. I can't be up there because then you can't hear me, and the acoustics of the room are not so good. I can, yeah, but the cord isn't long. The cord is short. So I have to do it here. Sorry. This, what you have there with well-formed plant, you all have that paper? Well-formed plant? This is a process by which you make plans that will actually work. So the first part of the plan is that it has to be stated in the positive. So this is the most important one. It's like if I say to all of you, okay, you can think about anything at all, anything except not an elephant. Do not think about an elephant, anything else. Right? Suppose we say, you know, I'm not going to be angry, I'm not going to be... It doesn't work. You have to pick what you positively want to do. So the first thing about a plan to work, it has to be stated in the positive. Now, if you have a tendency to state things in the negative, I don't want to be late anymore, I don't want to leave my house till 9 o'clock at night, I don't want to neglect my deities, I don't want to yell at my children. If you have that kind of a plan, if you ask yourself, what do I want to do instead? What do I want to do instead? So, like, if you gave yourself a low score for something with spiritual nourishment, you know, I want to stop chanting inattentive rounds. What do you want to do instead? I want to chant attentive rounds. There's a lot of devotees who've written a positive way for the 10 offenses. Maybe you've seen this? You know, respect devotees who have dedicated their life. Instead of don't offend them, respect them. So what do you want to do instead? So take the thing you have there, and this is private right now. I want you to write down somewhere what's your plan. First thing, just the first thing. What positive step do I want to take? Something you could do in the next week to try to fix this area where you gave yourself a one or a two. What do you want to do instead? What positive thing do you want to do to fix this? Please write that down. All right, next thing. Is under your personal control. So if you have a plan, you know, my husband's going to be nice to me when he gets home from work. That's not something you can control. Okay? My plan is my children will stop screaming. That it has to, what are you going to do? So it has to be in the positive and has to be something under your control. You know, so if your husband's grouchy when you get home, you might make a plan that you're going to have dinner ready at 5 o'clock. You understand? Or when my husband comes home, I will say something nice instead of complaining. You can make a plan for yourself. So these two things are the most important. Yeah, it's late because we started late. All right. Now, the next thing that I have was it... can I just see that for a second? Yeah. Can't remember, there's two that I can have in any order. Okay. So the next thing you want to have is your plan should be very specific for time, place, and circumstances. So if you want to say, you know, I'm going to have all my 16 mounds done by 6 o'clock in the morning, you may not be able to do that every day. So maybe you can do that on Friday and Saturday, but maybe you cannot do it on other days. They all said they could stay till 12:30. Our lesson is we really have to start on time. Okay. So check your plan and see about time, place, and circumstance. Is this plan you want? Do you want to do it every day? Do you want to do it some days? Do you want to do it under some circumstances? So check your plan for that. Is it under your control? And under what circumstances? Okay, the next part of the plan is being very specific about
three things. Prabhupada talks about thinking, feeling, and willing. So our thoughts, our emotions, and our actions.
So many times when we make a plan, we're making a plan just for the actions, and we're not considering our thoughts and our feelings. So if I were to do this plan, if I were to do this plan and do it successfully, what would I be doing, what would I be thinking, and what would I be feeling? So let's say I'm going to make a plan that every day before I eat lunch, I'm going to read one verse of Bhagavad Gita. Let's say that's my plan. So that's in the positive, yes? It's under my control. It's very specific for time and place and circumstance. And then I'm going, okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to read one verse of Bhagavad Gita. What am I going to think? I'm going to think, oh, I get to spend some time with Krishna and Arjuna. And if I'm also going to read the purport, I get to spend some time with Srila Prabhupada. That will be my thought, and my feeling could be that I'm excited. So I'm going to be specific. What I'm going to do, what I'm going to think, and how I'm going to feel. So you want to add to your plan some specificity about not just what we're going to do, but also what we want to think and feel. Okay, and then the last one is, what's the price? Because there's some reason why we haven't already done this. There's some kind of cost. Everything has some cost. So here you think about, what's the cost? What's the price? Am I willing to pay it? If I'm not, the plan's not going to work. Like you were talking about health, right? So someone might, no, yes, I should exercise, but what is the cost? Maybe I have to wake up a half an hour earlier, I have to drive to some class, I have to not do something else. There's always some cost. So with your plan, I want you to think about what is the cost, and write that down. What is going to be the cost, and am I willing to pay it? Okay, I want to go on now. We don't have a whole lot of time. We only have about 12 minutes. Thank you for those of you who stayed. I really apologize that we started so late. We want to talk now just a little bit about having a cooperative mood between us teachers, which relates to a lot of the things that we've already talked about. It relates to getting practical help. It relates to having the association of friends. It relates to those who will correct us. And it relates to those who are in our same profession, in our same service. So cooperation between teachers really helps with so many of these areas of staying inspired. So I'm going to ask some of you again. I know we're kind of running out of time. What are the benefits? Can anyone suggest some of the benefits of cooperation among teachers? Yeah?
Easy to reach the goal.
Much easier to reach your goal, yes. What else?
It's rhythmic.
Huh?
It's like a rhythm. It's rhythmic.
Oh, it provides like a
resonance.
Yes, thank you. Some other, yes?
Mataji, I always feel like that we are part of this world.
no matter where it's gone. So when we do something, whether negative or positive, it's contributing to the world. So if we do more positive things, so it's like a contribution to the world. Like sitting in your place with your own capacity, you are contributing to the world. So it's good for the everyone.
So when we're cooperating with others, it benefits actually the whole world.
The whole world.
That's a beautiful thought.
Better outcome of our service.
Definitely a better outcome of our service, yes. What kind of things can we share? We feel satisfied and happy. Excellent. So what sort of things can we do when we're cooperating?
We share different ideas. Put all those ideas together and come out with something really beneficial.
Yes, and I think we've all found how exciting that can be, isn't it? Oh, wow, I never thought about doing that. That's a great idea. What else? What are the other practical things we can share?
One more very good thing, actually, the thing that you mentioned, because negativity, nobody wants to get the negative feedback. But if you see, I was reading Shubhala Prabhu's book called Open-Minded Meditation, and that one chapter says, actually, envious person can be your disguised friend.
Yes.
They mentioned like how Duryodhana was snake for Karna, and Krishna, Arjun? Karna was a disguised letter for Arjuna. So it was a very wonderful realization.
Yes, that is what we should think in general about those who correct us. Thank you.
We should arrange to get together sometimes.
But what will we share? So we said we'll share ideas. What else can we share?
Our problems.
Our problems. We can help each other with our problems. Because the other teachers are facing very similar problems. What else can we share?
Our experiences,
yes. What else?
Our shortcomings.
What else? Absolutely.
Share the happiness with
our happiness, our successes. What else?
A strong relationship.
We get a strong relationship. And what else are we sharing in this relationship?
Effective techniques.
Effective techniques. Very good. Right. We can also complement each other's strengths. Maybe somebody is not an artsy, craftsy kind of person. You know, and it is not their thing. So maybe one person can create some craft projects that they can share. Maybe another person is really good at like analyzing and organizing. So maybe one person can do the analyzing, organizing, and one person can do the artsy, craftsy stuff, and then you can share. And that way we complement each other's strengths. If we cooperate more, what will the students get?
More positive vibrations.
Okay, what else?
Benefit of everybody's strengths.
Yes, they'll get the... Because no one by themselves is strong in everything. Right?
The true love and affection, basically. When we are happy...
Oh, well, that's also true. Because... If we're talking about that we have a society and it's based on love and trust, if we practically do that, it has a big effect on the students than if we just talk about it. Yes. And if we don't cooperate, guess what? We have more what? When we don't cooperate, more stress, more what else?
You have to do everything on your own.
Everything on your own. You have more work.
Yeah.
So you have more stress, you have more work, or you just come to class unprepared, and it's not as good of a class, and you know it's not as good of a class. And again, this very much relates to being inspired or whether we're burned out. Okay, so how can we cooperate? What is our process? Well, one way is just to be nice to each other. Such a radical idea in Kali Yuga, you know. We seem to really struggle with this in Kali Yuga. Just be nice to people and be respectful and say something nice, even if you don't like them so much. Somehow, even if they're like, they really annoy you, try to be respectful and say something nice. That's a big thing. And then some regular time when we discuss our craft, our service. well, I'm using this in the book and it's not really working for me, and what have you gotten over here? And as I'm saying, sharing responsibility to create resources. Right now, we do not have, well, maybe you do. Do you have all the resources that you would like to have wonderful classes? Do you? No, I didn't think so. So help to share them among yourselves. Get what could we use? What could we really need for Gaur Purnima? Well, maybe you could do this and you could do this. And to share resources, to share responsibility, to create resources. Then also to observe one another. Now, this needs some training, how to observe without
being judgmental.
And again, it really comes down to facts. Even positive judgments are not very good. Just facts. Just facts. Wow, I saw that you had everything ready for the craft project, and I saw that all the kids were engaged, and the different levels of kids all seemed to be busy. None of the kids were complaining. At the end, the kids had something really nice to bring home. Just facts. And we should do that sometime, have a training on how to observe. But to spend some time observing other teachers' classrooms, even if you just observe to get some ideas, and you think, wow, that's a really, I never thought of doing it that way. Just spend some time every once in a while talking about practice. You know, you don't always need to fly me into Bahrain. And this is something that's really important. And I think, I don't know how to say this, I think in ISKCON in general we struggle with this. That sometimes we have too much of what I call a rock star culture. You know, we think only the big senior devotees have something to offer. But, you know, everybody has something to offer. And if you've been teaching for 6 months or a year, you have something to offer. So I would really suggest that periodically, at least once or twice a year, have some little seminars among yourselves and ask each teacher to prepare something to share, even if it's just 5 or 10 minutes. This is a project that I'm doing. This is what I've been using for discipline. This is how I've been teaching this particular unit. You know, you could have like a little mini mela even, you know, that people just bring. They don't have to even stand up in front of the room if you want. Just someplace where you share with each other. All of you have something valuable to share. In fact, in many ways, you have more value to share with each other than I have to share with you, because you're teaching here with these children in this country now with these parents. Okay, I'm not teaching these children here in this country with these parents. So each of you have something of value. I mean, really, make it like twice a year, every 6 months, that everybody prepares a little something. You could, you know, they could bring it in and just talk casually or make a presentation. And just to know that the other teachers are your cheerleaders. Say something to the other teachers whenever you can, that thank you for being here. Thank you for doing this. Right? So why don't we always do this? What's our difficulty? Well, yeah, but let's not say that. Yeah, let's not go there. We poor devotees, we're always beating ourselves up psychologically all the time. I'm not doing this because I'm just so envious, and egotistical, and arrogant, and greedy, and fallen. I'm really a demon. That's why I'm not cooperating with the other teachers. Or maybe it's just they're the demons and they're the envious ones and that's why we're not cooperating. So let's not go there. Not today. You can go there another day when I'm not here. Let's just look at the external obstacles, not the heart obstacles. What are the reasons we're not doing this? Time management.
you know, I'm lucky if I can get my laundry in at night and get my rounds done and get the beds made and get the car clean. And I had to have something else I have to do. I have to cooperate with the teachers too. I'm tired. It's one of those mode of goodness things where, you know, it's poison in the beginning and nectar at the end. So at first it seems like another job to do, but it makes your work so much easier. It makes your work so much easier. I mean, one of the things I see on an international level is so many devotees creating their own resources for education. And a lot of these resources duplicate one another. Have you noticed this? This person's writing a story about Dhammadhargi, and then this person's writing a story, and this person's writing a story. And there's already 15 versions of the story, or 30 versions of the story. And they're writing another one. So, you know, it's actually giving us more work to do when we try to do it ourselves. I think another obstacle might be what? A little bit where we're maybe isolated. We're each in our own homes and doing our own thing.
Sometimes we feel maybe they may not understand. So what I mean or what I want to, so that.
Okay, so there may be some hesitation. Other people will be critical and they won't understand. Any other external obstacles?
Maybe not understand the purpose for which we are, what we are doing.
Okay, not even understanding our goals. Well, you know, cooperation can help with that. People can help with our goals. So I would like, we're really out of time, but I'd like just to take a few more minutes. Can we make some plan here now? One first step we're going to do towards teacher cooperation. Can we make some kind of plan that we can all agree with? Can someone suggest a plan and we have that well-formed plan? Take another 3 minutes. Let's make a plan. Should we do it individually? Should we do it with somebody else? We do it in the whole group, or you want to break up into smaller groups? Okay. Do some of you live geographically closer to each other? So can we break up into groups of people who live close to each other? What areas are we looking at here? Okay, people who live close to each other. Can you make little groups of people who live close to each other? And something cooperative you're going to do. Use the well-formed plan. Use that same well-formed plan. It's with somebody geographically close, all right? Some well-formed plan. Something you're going to do by the end of March. By the end of March. If possible, by the end of February, but at least by the end of March. Some plan. And use the well-formed plan.